Welcome to Once Upon a Storytime, the family-friendly storytelling podcast from Adventures Underground's Children's Department. My name is Carrie, and I'll be guiding you on this adventure. Stories have fascinated humanity for as long as we've been sharing them. In the spirit of Adventures Underground, we'll be taking this podcast off the beaten path and exploring some lesser-known tales, and all you listeners out there are along for the ride. Today, we'll be reading Joachim the Mimic. This story will be shared as told by Mrs. Alfred Gaddy in The Fairy Godmothers and Other Tales, which was copyright by Thomas Bell in London, England in 1851. And now, Once Upon a Storytime with Joachim the Mimic. There was, once upon a time, a little boy who, living in the time when genies and fairies used now and then to appear, had all the advantage of occasionally seeing wonderful sights, and all the disadvantage of being occasionally dreadfully frightened. This little boy was one day walking alone by the seaside, for he lived in a fishing town, and as he was watching the tide, he perceived a little bottle driven ashore by one of the big waves. He rushed forward to catch it before the wave sucked it back again, and succeeded. Now then he was quite delighted, but he couldn't get the cork out, for it was fastened down with resin, and there was a seal on the top. So, being very impatient, he took a stone and knocked the neck of the bottle off. What was his surprise to find himself instantly suffocated with a smoke that made his eyes smart and his nose sneeze, just as if a quantity of Scotch snuff had been thrown over him. He jumped about and puffed a good deal and was beginning to cry, as a matter of course for a little boy when he's annoyed, when lo and behold, he saw before him such an immense genie with black eyes and a long beard that he forgot all about crying and began to shake with fear. The genie told him he need not be afraid, and desired him not to shake. For, said he, you have been of great use to me. A genie, stronger than myself, had fastened me up in yonder bottle in a fit of ill humor, and as he had put his seal at the top, nobody could draw the cork. Luckily for me, you broke the neck of the bottle, and I'm free. Tell me, therefore, good little boy, what shall I do for you to show my gratitude? But now, before I go on with this, I must tell you that the day before the little boy's adventure with the bottle and the genie, the king of that country had come to the fishing town I spoke of, in a gold chariot drawn by 12 beautiful jet-black horses, and attended by a large train of officers and followers. A herald went before, announcing that the king was visiting the towns of his dominions, for the sole purpose of doing justice and exercising acts of charity and kindness. And all people in trouble and distress were invited to come and lay their complaints before him. And accordingly they did so, and the good king, though quite a youth, devoted the whole day to the benevolent purpose he proposed. And it is impossible to describe the amount of good he accomplished in that short time. Among others who benefited was our little boy's mother, a widow who had been much injured and oppressed. He redressed her grievances, and in addition to this, bestowed valuable and useful presents upon her. Look what an example this young king sets, was the cry on every side. Oh, my son, imitate him, exclaimed our poor widow, as in a transport of joy and emotion she threw her arms about her boy's neck. I wish I could imitate him and be like him, murmured little Joachim. Such was the child's name. My boy, cried the widow, imitate everything that is good and noble and virtuous, and you will be like him. Joachim looked earnestly in her face, but it was silent. He understood a good deal that his mother meant. He knew he was to try to do everything that was good and so be like the young king, but as he was but a little boy, I'm not quite sure that he had not gotten a sort of vague notion of the gold chariot and the 12 jet-black horses mixed up with his idea of imitating all that was good and noble and virtuous, and being like the young king. I may be wrong, but at 7 years old you will excuse him if his head did get a little confused, and if he could not quite separate his ideas of excessive virtue and goodness from all the splendor in which the pattern he was to imitate appeared before his eyes. However that may be, his mother's words made a profound impression upon him. He thought of nothing else, And if he had been in the silly habit of telling his dreams, dare I say he would have told his mother the next morning that he had been dreaming of them. Certainly, they came into his head the first thing in the morning, and they were still in his head when he walked along by the seashore, as has been described. So much so, that even his adventure did not make him forget them. And therefore, when this genie, as I told you before, offered to do anything he wanted, little Joachim said, "Genie, I want to be able to imitate everything that is good and noble and virtuous, so you must make me able." The genie looked very much surprised and rather confused. He expected to have been asked for toys, or money, or a new horse, or something nice of that sort. But Joachim looked very grave, so the genie saw he was in earnest, and he did a most wonderful thing for a genie. He actually sat down beside the little boy to talk to him. I don't recollect that a single genie in the Arabian Nights ever did such a thing before, but this genie did. What is more, he stroked his beard and spoke very softly as follows. "My dear little boy, you've asked a great thing. I can do part of what you wish, but not all, for what you have asked concerns the heart and conscience, and we genies cannot influence these, for the great ruler of all things alone has them under his control. He allows us, however, power over the intellect." "Ah, now I see you cannot understand me, little boy. Well, I mean this. I can make your head clever, but I cannot make your heart good. I can give you the power of imitation, but as to what you imitate, that must depend upon yourself and the great being I dare not name." After saying this, the genie laid his immense forefingers on each side of Joachim's head, just above his forehead, and then disappeared. Joachim felt no pain, but when he got up and put on his cap to go home, his head seemed almost too large for it. Perhaps he wanted a new cap, but the phrenologists would tell you that he had got the organ of imitation. He did not thoroughly understand what the genie said, but he was convinced that something had been done toward making him like the young king. As he was dawdling home, his eye was struck by the sight of a beautiful, picturesque, dark fishing boat, which he saw very plainly because the red sun was setting behind it. Joachim felt a strange wish to make something like it, and taking up a bit of white chalk he saw at his feet, he drew a picture of the boat on the tarred side of another that was near him. While he was so engaged, an old fisherman came up very angrily. He thought the child was disfiguring his boat, but to his surprise, he saw that the little fellow's drawing was so capital he wished he could do as much himself. "Why, who taught you that, young master?" said he. Joachim was no great talker at any time, and now he merely said, "Nobody," and smiled. "Well, you must draw my boat some day for me to hang up. And now here's a luck penny for you, for you certainly are a capital hand for such a youngster." Joachim was greatly pleased with the penny, for it was a curious old one with a hole through it, and he told his mother all about it. But though it may seem strange, he never mentioned the bottle and the genie to her at all. That appeared to him to be quite a private affair of his own. He altered very much, however, by degrees. He had been till then rather a dull, silent boy, and now he talked much more, and was more amusing, was always endeavoring to draw, and after being at church would try to read the prayers like the parson. His mother was delighted. She began to think her son would grow up a good scholar after all, and now, being well off, owing to the king's kindness, she resolved on sending little Joachim to school. To school, accordingly, he went. And here, my little readers, there was a great change for him. Hitherto he had lived very much alone with his mother, and being quiet and somewhat dull by nature, he had never till quite lately had many acquaintances of his own age. Now, however, he found himself among a great number of youths, of all ages and all characters. At first he was shy and observant, but this soon wore off and he became a quick favorite. Nobody was more liked at any time, and he was completely unrivaled in the playground. He could set all the boys in a roar of laughter when, hid behind a bush, he would bark so like a dog that the unhappy wights who were not in on the secret expected to see a vicious hound spring out upon them and took to their heels in fright. He was first in every attempt at acting, which the boys got up. and there was not a cat nor a pig in the neighborhood whose mew and squeak he could not give with the utmost exactness. If you ask how he got on in lessons, I must say, well, but not very well. His powers of entertaining his companions were so great that I fear he found their easily acquired praise more tempting than the rewards of laborious learning. He could learn easily enough, it's true, but while his steadier neighbors were working hard, he was always devising some new scheme for fun when lessons should be over, or making some odd drawing on his slate to induce his companions to an outburst of laughter. There were many excuses to be made for little Joachim, and it's always so pleasant to please that I don't much wonder at his being led astray by possessing the power. Time went on, meanwhile, and Joachim became aware at last that he possessed a larger share than common of the power of imitation. When he first clearly felt this, he thought of the genie and his two forefingers, I believe. But his school life and his funny ways and the constant diversion of his mind quite prevented his thinking of all the serious things the genie had said. Nay, even his mother's words had nearly faded from his mind, and he had forgotten the young king and his own wishes to be like him. It was a pity it was so, but so it was. Poor Joachim. He was a very good fellow and kind also in reality, but first the pleasure of making his companions laugh and then the pleasure of being a sort of little great man among them were fast misleading him. For instance, though at first he amused them by imitating dogs and cats and pigs, he next tried his powers at imitating anything queer and odd in the boys themselves, and for a time, this was most entertaining. When he mimicked the awkward walk of one boy, and the bad drawl of another, and the loudish carriage of a third, the school resounded with shouts of laughter, which seemed, to our hero, a great triumph, something like the cheers which had greeted the very good young king as he left the fishing town. But certainly the cause was a different one here. By degrees, however, it must be admitted that Joachim's popularity began a little to decrease. For though a boy has no objection to see his neighbor laughed at, he does not like so well to be laughed at himself, and there are very few who can bear it with good humor. And now Joachim had given such way to the pastime that he was always hunting up absurdities in his friends and neighbors, and no one felt safe. It was a long time before Joachim found out the change that was taking place, for there was still plenty of loud laughters on his side, but once or twice he had a feeling that all was not right. For instance, one day when he mimicked the awkward walker to the boy who spoke badly and stuttered, and then in the afternoon imitated the stutterer to the awkward boy, he had a twinge of conscience, for it whispered to him that he was a sneak and deceitful, particularly as both these boys had often helped him in doing his sums and lessons when he was too idle and too funny to labor at them himself. In fact, he had been so much helped that he was sadly behindhand in his books, for all the school had been willing to assist that good fellow, Joachim, as they called him. At last, a crisis came. A new boy arrived at the school, very big for his age and rather surly tempered, but a hard-working, persevering lad who was striving hard to learn and get on. He had one defect. He lisped very much, which certainly is an ugly trick, and it sounded silly in a great stout boy nearly 5 feet high, but he had this excuse. His mother had died when he was very little, and his father had more important business on hand in supporting his family, of which this boy was the eldest, than in teaching him to pronounce his S's better. It is perhaps only mothers who attend to these little matters. Well, this great big boy was 2 or 3 days at the school before Joachim went near him. There was something serious, stern, and unfunny in his face, and when Joachim was making the other boys laugh, the great big boy never even smiled, but fixed his eyes in a rather unpleasant manner upon Joachim as he raised them from his books. Still, he was an irresistible subject for the mimic, for though he learned his lessons without a mistake, and always obtained the master's praise, he read them with so strong a lisp, and this was rendered so remarkable by his loud, deep voice, that it fairly upset what little prudence Joachim possessed. And as he returned one day to his seat, after repeating a copy of verses in the manner I have described, Joachim, who was not far off, echoed the last two lines with such accuracy of imitation that it startled even the master, who was at that moment leaving the schoolroom. But no laugh followed as usual, for all eyes were suddenly turned on the big boy, who, crimson with indignation and yet quite self-possessed in manner, walked up to Joachim and deliberately knocked him down on the floor. Great was Joachim's amazement, you may be sure, and severe was the blow that had leveled him, but still more severe were the words that followed. "Young rascal," exclaimed the big boy, "who has put you in authority over your elders, that you are to be correcting our faults and failings instead of attending to your own? You are beholden to any lad in the school who will do your sums and write your exercises for you, and then you take upon yourself to ridicule us if we cannot pronounce our well-learnt lessons to your fancy. You saucy imp who don't know what labor and good conduct are, and who have nothing to boast of but the powers which a monkey possesses to a greater extent than yourself." Fancy Joachim's rage. He, the admired wit, the popular boy, nothing better than a monkey? He sprang up and struck his fist into the face of his antagonist with such fury that the big boy, though evidently unwilling to fight one less than himself, was obliged to bestow several sharp blows before he could rid himself of Joachim's passion. At last, however, other boys separated them, but Joachim, who was quite unused to fighting, and who had received a very severe shock when he first fell, became so sick and ill that he was obliged to go home. His mother asked what was the matter. He'd been quizzing a great big boy who lisped, and the boy knocked him down and they had fought, was the story she received. His mother sighed but saw he was too poorly for talking more, so she put him to bed and nursed him carefully. Now, you may say, what had this mother been about not to have found out and corrected Joachim's fault before? Well, first, he was very little at home, and as owing to the help of others, his idleness had not become notorious, so she had heard no complaints from the masters, and thinking he did his lessons well, she felt averse to stopping his fun and amusements in holiday hours. Still, she had lately begun to have misgivings, which this event confirmed. In a few days, Joachim was better and came downstairs, and his aunt and two or three cousins called to inquire after him. Their presence revived Joachim's flagging spirits, and all the boys got together to talk and laugh. Soon their voices echoed through the house. Joachim was at his old tricks again, and the schoolboys, the ushers, and the master all furnished food for mirth. His cousins roared with delight. "Clever child!" exclaimed his aunt. "What a treasure you are in a house! One could never be dull where you are." "Oh, sister, sister!" cried Joachim's mother. "Do not say so! My child's wit, oh, I wish you would give him to me! Come here, my dear Joachim, and do the boy that walks so badly once more for me. It's enough to kill one." Joachim's spirits rose above all control. Excited by his aunt's praise and the sense of superior ability, he surpassed himself. He gave the bad walker to perfection, then imitated a lad who had commenced singing lessons, and whose voice was at present broken and bad. He even gave the big boy's lisp once more and followed on with a series of pantomimic exhibitions. All at once, he cast his eyes on his mother's face, that face so full of intelligence and the mild sorrow of years of widowhood, borne with resigned patience. Her eyes were full of tears, and there was not a smile on her countenance. Joachim's conscience, he knew not why, twinged him terribly. He stopped suddenly. "Mother, come here, Joachim," she said. And so he came. "Is that boy whom you've been imitating, your aunt says so cleverly, the best walker of all the boys in your school?" "The best, mother?" And the puzzled Joachim could not suppress a smile. His cousins grinned. "Well, dear mother, of course not," continued Joachim. "On the contrary, he's the very worst." "Oh, well, have you no good walkers at your school?" "Oh, yes, several. Indeed, one especially. His father was a soldier, and he walks beautifully." "Well, does he, Joachim? Well, let me see you walk like him, my dear." Joachim stepped boldly enough into the middle of the room and drew himself up. But a sudden consciousness of his extreme inferiority to the soldier's son, both in figure, manner, and mode of walking,
made him feel quite sheepish. There was a pause of expectation. "Now then," said Joachim's mother.
"I cannot walk like him, mother," said Joachim.
"Well, why not?"
"Because he walks so very well."
"Oh," said Joachim's mother. There was another pause.
"Well, come, Joachim," continued the widow. "I'm very anxious to admire you as much as your aunt does. You're not tired. Let's have some more exhibitions. You just gave us a song just now, horribly out of tune, and with the screeching voice of a bagpipe."
"I was singing like John Smith," interrupted Joachim. "Is he your best singer?" inquired his mother, and another laugh followed.
"Well, nay, mother, no one sings so badly."
"Oh, indeed. Well, then, how does the singing master sing, Joachim?"
"Oh, mother," cried Joachim, "so beautifully, it would make the tears come to your eyes with pleasure to listen to him."
"Well, but as I cannot listen to him, let me, at all events, have the pleasure of hearing my clever son imitate him," was the reply. Joachim was mute. He had a voice, though not a remarkable one. He'd shirked the labor of trying to improve it by practice. He had made one effort to sing like the master, but felt overpowered by a sense of incapacity. His voice failed, and he felt disposed to cry.
"Why, Joachim, I thought you were such a clever creature you could imitate anything," cried his mother.
No answer fell from the abashed boy till a sudden thought revived him.
"But I can imitate the singing master, mother."
"Well, then let me hear you, my dear child."
"Why, it isn't exactly what you can hear," observed Joachim murmuringly, "but when he sings, you have no idea what horrible faces he makes. Nay, it's true, he turns up his eyes, shuts them, distorts his mouth, and swings about on the stool like the pendulum of a clock."
And Joachim performed all the grimaces and contortions to perfection, till his aunt and cousins were convulsed with laughter.
"Oh, well done!" cried his mother. "Now you are indeed like the cat in the German fable, Joachim, who voted himself like the bear because he could lick his paws after the same fashion, though he could not imitate either his courage or his strength. Now, let me look a little further into your education. Bring me your drawing book." It came, and there was page after page of odd and ugly faces, strange noses, stranger eyes, squinting out of the book in hideous array. "I suppose you will laugh again if I ask you if these are the beauties of your school, Joachim. But tell me seriously, are there no good or pleasant or handsome faces among your schoolfellows?"
"Plenty, mother. One or two the master calls models, and who often sit to him to be drawn by him."
"Draw one of those faces for me, my dear. I'm fond of beauty."
And the mother placed the book in his hands, pointing to a blank page. Joachim took the pencil and sat down. Now he thought he should be able to please his mother. But alas, he found, to his surprise, that the fine faces that he tried to recall had not left that vivid impression on his brain which enabled him to represent them. On the contrary, he was tormented and baffled by visions of the odd forms and grotesque countenances he had so often pictured. He seized the rubber and rubbed out nose after nose to no purpose, for he never could replace them with a better one. Drawing was his favorite amusement, and this disappointment, where he expected success, broke down his already depressed heart. He threw the book from him and burst into a flood of tears.
"Joachim, have you drawn him? What's making you cry?"
"I cannot draw him, mother," sobbed the distressed boy.
"And why not? Just look here. Here's an admirable likeness of Squinting Joe, as you've named him. Why can you not draw the handsome boy?"
"Because his face is so handsome," answered Joachim, still sobbing.
"My son," said his mother gravely, "you have now a sad lesson to learn, but a necessary and a wholesome one. Get up, desist from crying, and listen to me." Poor Joachim, who loved his mother dearly, obeyed. "Joachim, your aunt and your cousins and your schoolfellows have all called you clever. In what does your cleverness consist?"
"I will tell you.
In the reproduction of deformity, defects, failings, and misfortunes of every sort that fall under your observation. A worthy employment, truly, a noble ambition.
but I will now tell you the truth about yourself. You've never heard it before, and I feel sure you'll benefit now. A good or an evil genie, I don't know which, has bestowed upon you a great power, and you've misused it. Do you know what that power is? Joachim shook his head, though he trembled all over, for he felt as if awaking from a long dream to the recollection of the genie. It's the power of imitation, Joachim. I call it a great power, for it is essential to many great and useful things. It's essential to the orator, the linguist, the artist, and the musician. Nature herself teaches us the charm of imitation when in the smooth and clear lake you see the lovely landscape mirrored and repeated. What a lesson may we not read in this sight! The commonest pond, even that reflects the foliage of the tree that hangs over it, is calling out to us to reproduce for the solace and ornament of life. But oh, my son, my dear son, you have abused this gift of imitation, which might be such a blessing and a pleasure to you. You might, if you chose, imitate everything that's good and noble and virtuous and beautiful, and you are, instead of that, reproducing every aspect of deformity that crosses your path, until your brain is so stamped with images of defects, ugliness, and uncouthness that your hand and head refuse their office when I call upon you to reproduce the beauties with which the world is graced. I doubt if Joachim heard the latter part of his mother's speech. At the recurrence to the old sentence, a gleam of lightning seemed to shoot across his brain. Latent memories were aroused as keenly as if the events had just but occurred. And he sank at his mother's feet. When she ceased to speak, he rose. "Mother," said he, "I've been living in a cloud. I've been very wrong. Besides which, I have a secret to tell you. Nay, my aunt may hear it has been a secret, and then it was forgotten, but now I remember it all, and I understand a lot more than I used to." Here, Joachim recounted to his mother the whole story of her words to him, and his adventure with the genie in the bottle, and then, very slowly, and interrupted with many tears of repentance, he repeated what the genie had said about giving him the power of imitation, adding that the use he made of it must depend on himself and the great ruler of the heart and conscience. There was a fuss among the cousins at the notion of Joachim having talked to a genie. And to tell you the truth, this was all they thought about, and soon after they took their leave. The heart of Joachim's mother was at rest, however, for though she knew how hard her son would find it to alter what had become a habit of life, she knew that he was a good boy, and she saw that he was fully alive to his error now. "Oh, mother," said he during the course of that evening, "how plain I see it all now. The boy that stutters is a model of obedience and tenderness. I ought to have dwelt upon and imitated that. And, oh, I only thought of his stuttering. The boy that walks so clumsily, as well as the great fellow who lists, they're such industrious lads and so advanced in learning that the master thinks both will be greatly distinguished hereafter. And I, who... oh, my poor mother, I must confess, I hated to labor at anything, and I've got the boys to do all my lessons for me. And I, instead of imitating their industry, lost all my time in making fun of their defects. What shall I do?" The next morning, poor Joachim said his prayers more humbly than he had ever done before in his life, and kissing his mother, he went to school. The first thing he did on arriving was to go up to the big boy who had beaten him and beg him to shake hands. The larger boy was pleased, and a grim smile lightened up his face. "But, old fellow," said he, laying his hand upon Joachim's shoulder, "take a friend's advice. There's good in all of us, depend on it. Look out for all that's good, and let the bad points take care of themselves. You won't get any handsomer by squinting like poor Joe, nor speak any pleasanter for lisping like me, nor walk any better for aping hobbling. But the ugliest of us have some good about us. Look out for that, my little lad. I do, or I shouldn't be talking to you. I see that you're honest and forgiving, though you are a monkey. There now, I have to go on with my lessons and you go to yours." Never was better advice given to him.
and Joachim took it well and bore it bravely. But oh, how hard it was to his mind, accustomed for so long to wander away and seek amusement at wrong times, to settle down resolutely and laboriously to study. He made a strong effort, however, and though he had often to recall his thoughts, he, in a measure, succeeded. After school hours, he begged the big boy to come and sit by him, and then he requested his old friends and companions to listen to a story he had to tell them. They expected something funny, and many a broad grin was seen, but poor Joachim's eyes were still red from weeping, and his happy voice was so subdued the party soon became grave and wondering, and then Joachim told them everything. They were delighted to hear about the genie, and were also pleased to find themselves safe from Joachim's ridicule. It could not be expected that they would all understand the story, but the big boy did, and he became Joachim's greatest friend and advisor. That evening, our little friend, exhausted with the efforts and excitement of his almost first day of repentance, strolled out in a somewhat pensive mood to his favorite haunt, the seashore. A stormy sunset greeted his arrival on the beach, but the tide was ebbing, and he wandered on till he reached some caverns along the cliffs. And there, as had often been his wont, he sat down to gaze out upon the waste of waters, safe and protected from harm. It's very probable that he fell asleep, but the point could never clearly be known, for he always said it was no sleep and no dream that he had then, but whilst sitting in the inmost recesses of the cave, he saw once more his old friend the genie, who, after reproaching him with the bad use he had made of his precious gift, gave him a world of good advice and instruction. There's no doubt that after that time Joachim was seen daily struggling against his bad habits, and that by degrees he became able to exercise his mind in following after the good and beautiful instead of after the bad and ugly. It was a hard task to him for many a long day to fix his flighty thoughts down to the business at hand, and to dismiss from before his eyes the ridiculous images that often presented themselves. But his mother's wishes, or the genie's advice, or something better still, prevailed. And you cannot think of what wonderful use the genie's gift was to him then. Once turned in a right direction and toward worthy objects, he found it like a sort of friend at his right hand, helping him forward in some of the most interesting pursuits of life. All the energy he had once bestowed on imitating lisps and stuttering was now engaged in catching the sounds of foreign tongues, and thus taking one step towards the citizenship of the world. And instead of wasting time in gazing at the singing master's face, that he might ape its unnatural distortions, it was now the sweet tones of skillful harmony to which he bent his attention, and to which he strove, and not in vain, to reproduce. The portfolio which he brought home to his mother at the end of another half year was crowded with laborious and careful copies from the best models of beauty and grace, and not with those only, for many a handsome face could be found in its pages, but mother recognized some of her son's old companions. Portraits, not of the mere formation of mouths and noses, which in so many cases viewed merely as forms are defective and unattractive, but portraits of the same faces, upon which the character of the inward mind and heart was so stamped that it threw the mere shape of the features far into the background. Thus, with the pursuit of his favorite art, Joachim combined that most excellent gift of charity, for which it was now his pride and pleasure to make the charm of expression from the good points his friend had talked about triumph over any physical defects. The very spirit and soul of the best sort of portrait painting. And here, my dear young readers, I would fain call your attention to the fact of how one right habit produces another. The more Joachim labored over seizing the good expression of the faces he drew from, the more he was led to seek after and find out the good points themselves from whence the expression arose. And thus, at last, it became a habit with him to try and discover everything that was excellent and commendable in the characters of those he met. A very different plan from that pursued by many of us, who, in our exchange with each other, are but too apt to fasten with eagle-eye accuracy on failings and faults. This is a very grave error, and a very misleading one, for if it does nothing else, it deprives us of all the good we should get by a daily habit of contemplating what is worthy of our regard and remembrance. And so strongly did Joachim's mother feel this, and so earnestly did she wish for her son to understand that a power which seems bestowed for worldly ends may be turned to spiritual advantage also, that when his birthday came round, she presented to him, among other things, a little book called The Imitation of Jesus Christ. It was the work of an old fellow called Thomas A. Kempis, and though more practical books of piety have since been written, the idea contained in the title suggests a great lesson, and held up before Joachim's eyes him whom one of our own divines has since called the Great Exemplar. This part of our little hero's lesson of life we can all take to ourselves and go and do likewise. And so I hope his story may be profitable, though we haven't all of us a large genie gift of imitation as he had. With him, the excess of this power took a very natural turn, for though he possessed through its aid considerable facilities for music and the study of languages also, the course of events led him irresistibly to what is usually called the fine arts. And if the old dream of the royal chariot and the 12 black horses was never realized to him, a higher happiness by far was his, when some years after, he and his mother stood in the council house of his native town, she looking up with affectionate pride, while he showed her a portrait of the very good young king, which had, a few hours before, been hung up upon its walls. It was the work of Joachim himself. The end. Once again, this was Carrie reading Joachim the Mimic, as told by Mrs. Alfred Gaddy in The Fairy Godmothers and Other Tales, which was copyright by Thomas Bell in 1851. Thanks for joining us today, and be sure to listen along next time on Once Upon a Storytime.
You've been listening to Once Upon a Storytime, brought to you by AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episodes, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventures Underground at their online store or their virtual storefronts hosted by bookshop.org and Libro.fm. Physical, digital, or audio, Adventures Underground has you covered. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/advunderground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground, copyright 2018, all rights reserved.